Listening to All Access Pass, created by the Accessibility Collective on 101.9 CITR FM.
CITR is a collectively run show that covers issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with diverse cognitive and physical abilities.
On campus and beyond.
We are broadcasting live from our studio in the AMS Student Nest on the traditional, ancestral, occupied, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Hello, you are listening to All Access Pass, and today we are talking about Canada's upcoming accessibility legislation, which is a very exciting, and I would say very historic, change that's coming to Canada for people, Canadians with disabilities. So that being said, the overall Canadians with Disabilities Act is to, the goal of it is to increase the inclusion and participation of Canadians in society and promote equality of opportunity by providing accessibility by removing barriers and areas of federal jurisdiction. Now, the person in charge of this is a really, really great person. She's really centered in the goals of the legislation. Her name is Carla Qualthrough. She's actually from BC, and she's she is the federal Minister of Sports and the in charge of the first ever. She's the minister responsible for people with disabilities. She's legally blind and is a human rights lawyer, a former Paralympian, and a world champion swimming medalist. Explaining her own disability, Qualthrough said, "When I was growing up, it was called accommodation, but today it's called innovation," end quote. It's important to recognize that Canada's first ever minister responsible for disabilities is legally blind herself, and that the community will be represented by someone who has insight on what affects them daily and how important legislation can be to bring about positive change to Canada. Qualthrough hopes to have the legislation ready to introduce to the Commons by the end of 2017 this year or early 2018. Between July 2016 and February 2017, the Government of Canada consulted with Canadians on planned accessibility legislation online in order to ensure a more inclusive kind of creation process. They also host public sessions and a national youth forum that took place just this last November. So to kind of get a better idea and sense of what to expect, as well as the situation in Canada, we thought we'd sit down with someone who really knows his stuff. Back in January, we had Bill Conway come on and talk about seeing eye dogs, and he's back with us today. I talked to him yesterday about the accessibility legislation, so we're just going to take a listen to that.
Culture, I will say culture, that enters this company, or enters this country, has all their rights provided for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not going to be specific on any one, but, you know, all you got to do is listen to Toronto News and Ontario News, or the Ottawa News, and you see what happened with M103, you see what happened in the Peel School Board. You'll be able to, you know, you hear what happening to the laws of the Ontario SPCA regarding my puppy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if the disability community do not stand up for any of this, or, you know, for our own rights, so that we too can have access to an elevator. Reason, you know, I can walk into an elevator and be able to push a button. I know what floor I'm going to.
Right.
And a prime example where I cannot do that is in the medical building on the corner on the, let's see, that would be the south, no, northwest corner of Broadway and
mm-hmm.
Willow. A blind person cannot go in there and press a button to the floor in which he or she has to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and neither could, is there a DB? Is it DB?
DP, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. She would not be able to do it either.
Right, right.
You know, so to have guidelines or an act or a law, whatever you want to call it, it's in Canada would be an act, it will start making antiquated buildings like this year come up to 2017 standards.
Right, right.
To enable one and all to access the building.
Okay, so, well, I know that we met at the legislation consultation back in November. It was an opportunity for the public to voice their concerns directly to Minister Qualthrough herself. Now, what was the issue that you spoke about?
The issue I spoke about at that consultation center session was pertaining to when a guide dog or a service dog enters Canada through customs or goes through security at any airport, the custom agents wants to wand our dogs, or like we as humans are patted down, but our dogs are, they should never be wanded, cannot be touched.
Mm-hmm.
The uniform of our dogs, i.e. in my case, collar, leash, and harness, should never be removed from a dog.
Right.
This has happened in airports in Canada, United States, and other places around the world. So when I raised my issue to the minister on that day, I asked for a framework to be put together so that when our dogs, our certified dogs, go through this type of situation, in whether it be in a courthouse where there's security checks in courthouses, metal detector checkers, that our dogs are treated the same way, that they are not to be touched. They can be scanned by the naked eye only.
Right.
That is all. And no part of the dog's uniform should ever be asked to be removed unless it's in a secured area.
Right.
And that is important because if they really insist upon it, well, then, you know, we will have to go into a secured room because you don't want a puppy loose in an airport,
mm-hmm.
having a free-for-all.
Right.
And get me if you can catch me.
Right, right. It would not be a preferable situation for both the security staff and yourself.
Correct.
Obviously.
And when the wand do comes close to a dog, the dog could, you know, go up and grab it.
Right, right.
Because it's irritating to them along their bodies.
Right.
They're not used to that bark. And their uniform is full of metal.
Yeah.
Collar, harness, and leash.
Mm-hmm.
All the metal clips on. So that was my question that I asked around that area. And if you noticed that right after the break, I was centered or asked if I was still in the room.
Mm-hmm, I remember that.
And the minister had already contacted the Canadian CATSA, Canadian Association of Transportation Security, or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they'll be looking into this forthwith.
Right. And have you heard anything back since?
No. Nothing has come returned, no.
But she was able to contact them.
Right off the bat.
Lovely. I mean, it's a good start.
And you realize I was the only person in that whole entire room that had that done?
Yep.
And like my friend to my right, my eyes, my walking eyes, is my setting eyes, or talking eyes, there we are, talking eyes, punched me in the shoulder and says, way to go.
Yeah.
Because no other person, and there were six other guide dogs in that room, and the only dog that had his picture portrayed or asked to be taken was the chief.
Right. Right.
Well, that's being a little egotistical, but, you know, it's nice to have that.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Now, do you feel that because you've had all this experience, you know, working to make things more accessible for people that are visually impaired, that you were kind of maybe, like, more well-versed, I guess, in terms of knowing what to ask for?
I went in with a specific topic in my mind.
Right.
Okay. That was something I muddled over in my mind, how I was going to ask it.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn and I, we discussed it in the car coming over, how I could ask it in a polite manner without being forceful or demanding, and realized I only had 3 minutes to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There was not a lot of time.
So requests. Being quick on your feet,
right,
and doing it with no prepared text in front of you, I'd read absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you realize that, I read nothing. It was all off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
and where other people were reading prepared statements.
Right.
So, yes, I'm well-versed in what I asked, but I'm well aware
right.
of what other disabilities were asking also.
Right.
And they were, you know, long-winded, if I can say that,
mm-hmm.
with prepared statements.
Right.
Where I think, with me doing it right off the top of my head, the minister responded more quickly.
Right.
I felt much more quicker. Her response to me was fantastic in the outcome of that there. And I do believe there's a whole bunch of people going to Toronto, and I know four of them's got dogs. They'll be boarding the planes going to Toronto later this month to attend a conference in Toronto. I won't be one of them. they've traveled to other places. They said there has been some improvements coming through customs and going through security with our puppies.
Mm-hmm. They've seen since the consultation?
Yeah, one of the ladies were there. Was at the consultation meeting because I met her outside relieving her puppies. That's how we went. We're going to a park yard. All the dogs are here, yep. But that is, it does show there has been some improvements.
Right.
Is there to be needed more? I don't know because I personally have not been through the security of the airports at this time.
Right. Now, with the whole consultation process, you said you had a statement prepared that you were able to voice. People brought prepared statements. What were kind of your thoughts on the whole like consultation process? Like, why was it important to go? Why do you think that it was important that people were able to voice their opinions? Do you think that those opinions were taken into account?
First of all, I believed it was very important for me to go. As a person who sits as a provincial director that deals with the advocacy of people with visual impairments, that is why it was important for me to go. That's what I do as a board director. I'm an advocate for the visually impaired people along with guide dogs.
Right.
The opportunity for me came and I went.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it was important for other disabilities to attend because I did not realize all the numbers of disability groups
right.
or disabilities is themselves.
Yeah.
And like most of them could be and are hidden.
Exactly, yep.
And to bring it to the attention of the minister in a group area, a town hall meeting area or situation of it made her more aware of the concerns of the people that deal with our lives each and every single day with the disability that we do have.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that a good portion of the concerns or statements were centered and directed towards the provincial government
yep.
and not have any federal ability to change or even create a framework for their concern.
Mm-hmm.
So people was going there, I thought some people were going there particularly to voice opinions regarding the provincial government.
Right.
Those I did hear at the national level were more at the very, very beginning of the session, whether it be Rob Sleaf was up there, and who was the guy in Wiltshire? He's right on the tip of my tongue.
Was it the person from Richmond Disability Center?
Yeah, him. Yeah, those guys, yes, they, you know, the first five had 5 minutes each, so.
Yeah.
Or if not longer. And, they were looking at it as a national item,
mm-hmm.
which they were hoping to get the rest of the core of the group to focus in on. But as a national issue, it was well done because it gave the minister ideas of creating a framework or structuring a framework to look at not only at each individual disability, but try to make it that we all live in the same house.
Right.
And a room is not taken out because it's got no windows.
Right.
Or you can't access because it's got no doors.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the Disability Act is like a house. Yeah, like a deck of cards, a house made out of cards. Because you put them all together, we become stronger, more forceful, more visible, and more hurtable.
Right.
I'm meaning listen or heard. H-E-A-R-D, not H-E-R-D. So that way, make sure we're not a bunch of cows.
Maybe not the proper animal behavior, but yes.
Yes. But and as soon as you take out one of those cards, the framework and or the structure will start to fall apart.
Right.
And unfortunately, I had this same argument with the potential leader, the new leader of the NDP, a number of years ago when he wanted to put all people with disabilities in their own little categories.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a wheelchair, you go over there. You're blind, you go over there.
Right.
Okay. And I told him right off the bat, and I can tell you that the people around the table were not pleased with my approach, but they soon found out that I was right because I stand up for it. But I believe working together, voicing our opinions together,
right,
and working in collaboration with the people at the top, meaning the minister, things can, will, and should get done in a transparent manner.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of those national interests that are we're hoping to achieve through this federal legislation, one of the things I know Minister Coulter was saying that one of the main things is establishing a legally laid out definition of disability in Canada. Why do you think that's so important?
Creating a definition, a legal definition of disability, people tell me I don't look blind, for example, and I'll use me as an example because people tell me I don't look blind. But I am blind. I see absolutely nothing. And my immediate response is that, what does blind people look like?
Right.
When it comes to a person in a chair, whether it be electric and or manual, they may have a variety of disabilities that may put them into that situation. You may have to categorize all or create a definition that will include all peoples who may ride in a chair or have to use a chair with parameters around each disability, probably, like, you know, polio, or a quad or a pair. Or spina bifida, these people, yes, I realize, need chairs. The definition of a disability, it's got to be really, really tough, really, really tough to do, because I have no idea.
Yeah,
it's
for
important
sure.
That one should be created, but how it should be created, so that when I go to court, I don't have to go around and create 7 different medical documentations to prove I'm blind.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor, I can pop my eyes out. Would you like to see them? And yes, I've said that. Not to a judge, though. But I'd be bold enough to do it.
Right.
Yes, mister, I can get up and walk out of the chair. Would you like to see me how it's done? Would you like to try and help me do it?
Right.
My brother died in a chair. So I am familiar with people who use electric chairs.
Right.
We have to really be careful to me when it comes to, legally, you've got to, that is something that's out of my ranking.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe it is needed so that when we have to go into a court of law, there's something that we can fall on saying that my disability prevented me from doing yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Your disability was visual impairment. Well, why could you not do yada, yada, yada?
Right.
What barriers were in there? So you have to look at barriers, access, illegal access, for the disabled person with a disability.
Right. Yeah, when you say that, I immediately think of, discrimination cases, workplace discrimination cases, where this, I would assume this would make it a lot easier for people with disabilities to be able to defend themselves and not have to provide all these papers, like you were saying.
That's right. Yeah. Nowadays, I'll give you an example. For me to register my CNI dog, which is a certified dog, trained at a certified school, for it to be registered and to have all to be protected underneath the laws of British Columbia, Guide Dog and Service Dog Act, I must, one, fill out 2.5 pages of information. Two, send along with these completed 2 pages, 2.5 pages of information, 2 primary identifications. One must be pictured.
Mm-hmm.
Three, I must also approach the school in which I was trained at and have them write a letter on my behalf on why I should have a certified CNI dog.
All right.
Will I do it? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
I won't. And will I be protected? The human rights in this province do not protect the rights of a guide dog user.
Right.
A prime example of that was just a couple weeks ago on the SkyTrain.
And what happened there?
With the two autism ladies with their dogs.
Right.
They were forced off the train by SkyTrain attendants or SkyTrain cops or police, whatever you want to call them. I got other names for them. But I'm being polite here. The only thing these two ladies, and did not have, one did not have a picture ID of her and the dog, and all she had was a guide dog and service dog the Blind Men's Rights Act that would be totally no longer acceptable at the end of June. But nobody knew that.
Right.
Nobody knew that. Not one person knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Until these two young ladies were removed from the train.
Right.
Now, so they are now going to go and get their dogs registered.
Right.
I won't.
Hey, you were just listening to Bob Conway and myself. We are talking about the accessibility legislation. For those of you that are just tuning in, Bill is a longtime advocate for accessibility, especially for the visually impaired. He's the provincial director of CCD, the BC Yukon division, and has founded much of the disability legislation within BC. So after the break, we're going to play the rest of our conversation. But for now, guys, we're going to treat you to a little song. This is Miss Resentment by the April Fool's Children. They're from Vancouver. Connie, take it away.
Thank you. I am sorry.
UBC Africa Awareness Initiative is a student-run organization that advocates for a greater inclusion of Africa and African-related issues in UBC academia and social life. Some of our major events include Dioko, UBC's largest African dance party, Culture Night, a celebration of African culture and diversity, and Conference Week, where our goal is to foster more intelligent and intellectual dialogue about Africa on the UBC campus. With this in mind, we hope to contribute towards creating global citizens with a more informed perspective of the continent.
Multiple times Juno Award winner Alex Cuba releases his sixth studio album, Lo Único Constante, The One Constant, on April 7th. The One Constant draws from some of Alex's earliest influences from his childhood in Cuba. Catch him on tour this fall. The One Constant is available online and in stores April 7th. Visit alexcuba.com for more information.
Hello, you are listening to All Access Pass, and if you're just tuning in, we're about to listen to part two of our discussion about the upcoming Canadian accessibility legislation, where we had Bill Conway from CCD come in and speak with us. So we're just going to take a listen to that.
It is at kind of the point where we need to have it at least a legal baseline for people to be able to fall back on and say that, you know, these are my rights and this is not okay, what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the girls had to be careful because if they got all upset, they could have had, unfortunately, a situation where the dogs had to be put in the full action.
Right.
In front of the, and what would the, in this situation, what would the TransLink staff have done?
Exactly, yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry, that might have got off topic.
Oh, no, that was...
I try to provide you information surrounding different things that I've been experienced with.
Oh, no, that was perfect. And I think it's interesting also to mention kind of like police force and supervision force, with TransLink officers and things like that. Because I know, for example, in the States, they have an accessibility legislation.
Yes.
But when Trump was coming into power, I think when he was elected, there was this fear that because he's not very for a lot of the medical legislation, that this would inadvertently weaken the accessibility legislation, and therefore, in terms of police interactions with people with disabilities, this could possibly get worse.
Yep, and right now I'm glad I'm not in the States. I'm glad I'm Canadian.
Yeah.
That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
And 100% proud of it. But, with the minister doing what she is doing, I can't pronounce her last name. You get the pleasure of tripping over her letters. she will be able to put together something that will benefit one and all.
Right. And, well, at least from my own perspective and what I'm seeing, she herself is a person with disability. She was a
human rights lawyer
and championing Paralympian who was in the Olympics for swimming.
Yes, she was.
So, I mean, in terms of her standpoint and her being the one pioneering this law, I think that that's... And her
Trudeau did a fantastic selection.
I think she's making Canada quite proud.
In many, many aspects, and I hold no alliance to no political party whatsoever.
Right.
And I've been asked to join all of them.
Popular guy.
Well, I have strong opinions, I think, and they can fit into any government.
Mm-hmm.
Or any type of politics, because if you frame my opinions properly, they'll fit into the Greens or the Liberals or the terrible conservatives.
No preference, right?
No. I don't have any preference or the no down payments.
Right, exactly.
So, I look at them all.
Yeah, of course.
But I think it's, I'm hoping that Carla does a fantastic job at doing this year. It will benefit Canadians from coast to coast to coast. And that's Pacific to the Atlantic to the Arctic.
Yeah.
And I think it is it's about time.
Yeah.
In this day and age that we Canadians with disabilities finally get something that we have championed ourselves.
Right. Now, something that's just come up, I was thinking, for people that might be saying like, oh, you know, Canada has all these, you know, transportation is relatively accessible, we have ramps, we, you know, there is that consideration for people with disabilities. What would you say to those people in terms of like, no, we do need an accessibility legislation? There's still more to grow.
Okay, when you talk about accessibility, that's one thing. When you talk about a Disabilities Act, that's another thing, okay? So they're two separate identities in my eyes. Accessibility, we should have it 100% in every single community from coast to coast to coast, border to border. I stand tall when I'm able to look at a community and give challenging feedback on how to adapt a community to make it accessible for one and all. And I just don't look at me being blind walking down the street with a stick. I look at a mother pushing a stroller with a child in it. How is she going to get in and out of a building? How is she going to be able to cross the street? How is the person using a manual chair going to go in and out of a building and vice versa and same thing? How are they going to get in and out of their vehicles, especially if they're using a manual chair and or an electric chair? Because you can drive if you got an electric chair too, if you're able to use the hand controls. So having a provincial legislation dealing with accessibility is important. At the national level, that is where you have a Disability Act or a law that entitles every person with a disability has the same equal access to travel on Canadian transportation systems, coast to coast to coast. In my reference to this year is these two, this senior citizen and his wife both travel with scooters. Back in the late 90s, the Canadian Council of Disability presented Via Rail with a solution on how to put a space in the and build a lift to go onto the train to enable a person with a chair or a chair for them to board a train. At that time, Via Rail indicated that they would look into the matter, and the Canadian transportation people at that time, whatever they were officially called, mandated that Via Rail make at least one seat available to a person in a manual chair. Just recently, these two elderly couple, one sounded like he might have had MS, but I don't know. It just sounded like that to me. But they both drove scooters, and they had to take a train separately.
Because of the one chair.
Yeah.
Right.
And once again, Via Rail says, when they took him to court, this couple won, and Via Rail is appealing it.
And why are they appealing it?
Because they cannot afford to do it, make it possible this time. But they are bringing in new trains.
Right.
That will accommodate more people with disabilities and have more tie-down areas, as they call them.
Right.
When you travel on the GO train in Ontario, there's no problem with a person with a scooter or something to get on there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, same thing on the SkyTrain in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing on my BC Transit bus here in Seashell.
Mm-hmm.
You can get on and off with a scooter. unfortunately, you only can fit maybe one scooter on at a time on a bus. But that's, you know, that's because of the nature of the transportation system.
Right.
But to me, BC Transit has done a good job because they have the alternative of being handy dirt.
Right, right.
So, you know, that is the alternative. And it's very accessible if and when it's available.
Right, right. Right.
But there again, so that is why when you look at accessibility, that is a provincial, in my eyes, a provincial mandate to make the communities and its buildings accessible. When it comes to a federal Disabilities Act, it creates the law across the land to make everybody accessible or have access to all the things that are federally run.
Mm-hmm.
You have to define each section there. Accessibility
right.
is one thing, and
sure.
the Disability Act is totally something different.
Right.
That the Disability Act encompasses the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
The accessibility law covers our province of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Or the province of Ontario. So, yeah, it is really something there. All I got to do is, there's a new law that came in Ontario through the Ontario SPCA where the collar I wear my dog wears,
mm-hmm.
is illegal.
And why is that?
Because the Ontario SPCA has outlawed choke chain, train collars, and pinching collars.
Oh. So does that mean like...
My dog can, if I'm caught in the province of Ontario
with that type of collar,
it's a fine of $250. Thank you very much.
Was there any feedback on that?
Today, I was just, you called me and I didn't get the end of it. But today, this was at City Toronto. City Toronto Council passed this law that took effect on January 1st. Today, one of the councillors, I forget his name, but I know Tracy Cook was going to be presenting it from the Licensing Bureau of the city, to amend a motion to exclude guide dogs. But today, when I come home, I was listening to the Toronto News, and one of the councillors himself is standing up and asking that the motion be repealed.
Mm-hmm.
And that it goes back to the drawing board because many of the stakeholders were not included.
Right.
In any parts of the discussion,
mm-hmm.
i.e. Canine Vision Canada, a guide dog school, and a service dog school in Oakville, or the Canadian Guide Dogs for the Blind, which is a guide dog school outside of Ottawa in Manitouk, or not even the PTSD dog school for our veterans weren't even asked to sit at the table. But I'll find out tonight or tomorrow morning if that motion was repealed through CP24 is what I listened to, CP24 of the Toronto.
Mm. So with the kind of legislation and then the different movements within the different provinces like this, this act that you were saying was just passed through in January in Ontario.
Yeah, was this in the city of Toronto?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was just within the city of Toronto.
Just within the city of Toronto. But if I went to visit Toronto with my dog and got caught with that collar on my dog, I'd be fined.
Right.
$250. Right. I came as a tourist.
Right. Right.
It's just like when people come from another province and cannot access a place with their dog, it means nothing. In province of BC, hey, your dog's not registered. It's your problem.
Right.
Well, sorry, that's against, to me, that is where the federal act would come in.
Right.
Okay, so whatever act the province does not cover for people who travel across this land with a puppy only, for example, the federal government Disability Act should cover
for sure. And do you feel that it would also influence the provincial level of government in terms of fixing their laws that may inadvertently affect people with disabilities, for example, this law that you just mentioned?
Okay, what should happen then? You're almost right. You know, and I'm saying you probably are right, but it should give the advocacy groups disability groups of the province, and we'll use BC for example, to force our provincial government to ensure that the laws of British Columbia are equal and if not better than the laws of Canada.
Right.
Because if the law of Canada says that I have the right to go to Ontario with my dog with its collar on, and the law of Toronto says, sorry, that collar is illegal in this city, who wins?
Right.
The lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a legal case.
Right.
When somebody came here from another province and went to stay at a B&B, they couldn't take their dog at the 11th hour when they got there.
Mm.
Well, that is downright, to me, discrimination. But underneath the BC law, the person who owned the B&B had the right to do that because that person did not have a registered dog from the province that did not register their dog when they come to visit our province of British Columbia.
Right.
So it is it's a catch-22 situation.
Mm-hmm.
It is really is damned if you do and damned if you don't. But if we have a Canadian Disability Act, it will ensure that the provinces either match or beat the Canadian Disability Act.
Mm-hmm.
Either match what it is at the federal level or make it better.
Help, I need somebody.
Help,
not just anybody.
Help,
you know I need someone.
Do you ever feel uncomfortable or unsafe walking around campus at night? There's an AMS service dedicated to helping anyone trying to get across campus alone at night. We're SafeWalk, and we have your back. Call us at 604-822-5355 to request a transfer, or check out our website at ams.ubc.ca/safewalk for more information on hours and policies.
Hi. We are back. This is All Access Pass. And to get a little bit more opinion and 2 cents in about the upcoming Canadian accessibility legislation, we thought we'd talk to another group. We spoke online through online correspondence with ASEN, which is the Autism Self-Advocacy Network, which is a nonprofit organization run by and for people with autism. So they preferred to speak online through email. So we're actually going to be reading out their interview. I'm joined in the studio by Dora.
Hi.
And Miriam.
Hi.
So Connie, who is our boards person, she will be asking the questions. And Dora, you will be taking on the answers of
Vivian Lee.
And Miriam.
Allie.
And I'll be doing the ASEN member, Mia. So we're just going to get going.
So the first question we have is, can you tell us who you are and a bit about yourselves?
My name is Vivian Lee, and I am an autistic self-advocate who is also Chinese, gender nonconforming, and chronically physically ill. I was diagnosed with ASD in my late teens, and I'm now 22 years old. My interests in advocacy include autistic self-advocacy and its various intersections with race, gender, age, sexual orientation, religion, and other disabilities.
My name is Allie. I'm a 22-year-old woman. I was diagnosed autistic when I was 5. I am currently studying psychology at Douglas College.
Hey, so I'm Mia. I'm a disabled deaf autistic. I've only ever recently become involved in the deaf community as well as the autistic community. I have been in the disabled community for around 3 years.
So can you tell us what is autism self-advocacy all about?
Autistic self-advocacy is built on concepts like neurodiversity and the social model of disability. In a nutshell, neurodiversity is about how there is not just one brain type or neurotype, but a wide range. It redefines what is considered normal or natural. In this sense, autism is a naturally occurring phenomenon, one that should not be stigmatized as much as it is today. The social model of disability also proposes that it is not our physicality that disables us, but systems that are built to accommodate others that disable us and make it hard for us to be included in society. Self-advocates like myself argue against a cure because we believe that autism is part of the wide breadth of human diversity and experience. Eradicating autism would be erasing individuals like me and erasing how we experience the world. For me personally, being autistic is as much a part of my identity as being trans or being Chinese. In this sense, our needs are not special needs, but rather simply human needs. And this makes our demand for accessibility and inclusion in society not a privilege, but a human right. Autistic self-advocacy is about community. It's also about community. Believe it or not, there is such a thing as autistic culture. Getting involved with ASAN has allowed me to meet others who share a common experience of the world and really connect to others like me.
One of the main goals of autism advocacy is to make sure autistic people are involved in the process of making decisions that will affect them. Some of the things we advocate for is autism rights and disability rights in general.
Autism self-advocacy is about showing people what autism really is, that we are capable, our brains may work in a little differently, but we are still human. It is about fighting for access and acceptance.
So now I think we all know a bit about autism now. And in terms of accessibility, what kind of barriers have you encountered when getting around places like the transportation or finding work?
Sensory sensitivities are the main issues when I travel. Like many other autistics, I have sound sensitivity and traveling is very loud. There's so much sensory stimuli on public transit and it can be overwhelming enough to cause meltdowns or shutdowns. Regarding work, attitudes play a huge role in barriers to accessibility. There is a lot of ignorance surrounding autism and a lot of misinformation based on stereotypes. Microaggressions and rude comments about autism are common, and I find that it's hard sometimes to have my voice heard and my accommodations to be respected. Finding the type of work that is not too overwhelming sensory-wise can be difficult, too. For me, it rules out a lot of customer service jobs that are geared towards people my age. I'm in university now pursuing a bachelor's, and getting to this level of education has been very difficult. Even with formal registration of my accommodations, I have encountered professors who would not bother to honor them and make it very difficult to succeed in class. Campuses can also be physically inaccessible. For example, SFU has stairs everywhere and not a good elevator system. Where some people may see stairs as just stairs, I see it as a roadblock where I have to find another route around that is longer and harder to follow. If going to university means greater chances of employment, going through the whole process of getting a degree is that much harder for a disabled student because of systematic barriers and attitudes and physical designs of space.
I fear discrimination in the workplace. Interviews of any kind are very challenging for me, and I'm afraid that I will be discriminated against if I tell them that I'm autistic. But I also feel they will not be understanding of potential social mistakes during a job interview if I don't. There are organizations that look to hire autistic people, but they are mostly IT organizations. A lot of my autistic friends and peers and I are not into IT. I have not experienced many problems in transportation, but I am unable to drive and dislike that it is assumed everyone over 18 drives.
Well, for accessibility, I get a lot of issues. Everything is built for able-bodied, hearing, neurotypical, so if you aren't that, then access is a lot harder. A lot of places don't have ramps, elevators, movie theaters don't have closed captioning devices, public transit is a different story. I've had buses drive by the bus stop because I have had my service dog with me. Public transit also do not have a visual notification system, which is needed when announcements are made.
You are known as self-advocate, so whether is it from the past or for the future, what are some of the issues or awareness that you have brought in to get some attention? In other words, have you worked on any projects or hosted an event to bring any awareness or concerns? If so, what are they?
With April coming up soon, the public will be seeing a lot of messages regarding autism awareness. However, most autistic self-advocates I know don't celebrate autism awareness, but rather autism acceptance. As well, several movements in response to Autism Speaks Light It Up Blue campaigns. These include Red Instead and Tone It Down Taupe. Generally, I see people wearing red more for autism acceptance, but definitely not blue. The online communities tend to generate a lot of creative works and write a lot of pieces under the term autism acceptance during April. ASAN has a website that is a good primer for anyone interested in learning more about autism acceptance. Just go to www.autismacceptancemonth.com. For the Vancouver chapter, our focus right now is to prepare for June 18th, Autistic Pride Day, since we will be hosting a community potluck. In the past, ASAN Vancouver has hosted events to celebrate other parts of autistic culture, such as Special Interest Day and glitter jar making. As well, we have recently hosted our third annual Disability Day or Morning Vigil on March 1st at Woodlands Memorial Garden. It is to honor the lives of people with disabilities who were murdered by their family or their caretakers. These murders can be framed by media as mercy killings or put too much emphasis and sympathy towards murderer, with a disabled person being viewed as a burden. The vigil was created to go against this narrative and give the victims the commemoration they deserve. A list of victims gets longer every year, and for many of them, our vigil is the only time their names and lives are commemorated. We want to remember those in the community who were unjustly taken away from us and to make a statement that our lives here value.
In the fall, ASAN did a protest against another autism organization called Autism Speaks, who are not very respectful to autistic people. For a reason, they made a video called I Am Autism, which made autism seem really scary. The U.S. chapter only has two autistic people on their board. Autism Speaks has a fundraising walk in Richmond, and we wanted to try and promote neurodiversity and tell people what was wrong with Autism Speaks. I will personally be making a video that will be posted online in early April promoting autism acceptance.
Right now, April is approaching, which is a big month for autistic people. As a community, we try to get people to stray away from lighting it up blue. For me personally, that means making videos on my YouTube, sharing resources with people, helping people understand why we want acceptance and not awareness. Right now, myself and some disabled YouTubers are working on a neurodiversity day where we can share our stories and show what it is really like.
Canada will be introducing its first ever accessibility legislation. What are your thoughts on that? Are you in favor of it? What kind of suggestion would you make to Minister Crossrew?
I am very much in favor for the new federal legislation. It has been a long time coming to have something similar to the Americans with Disabilities Act in the USA. However, I have worries that it will not be as powerful in scope and not as effectively implemented as it can be. We need legislation that has bite and power to address and break down barriers. On top of that, many of the systems that affect the lives of disabled individuals are mainly under provincial jurisdiction, like education, disability benefits, and pharmacare. My hope is that the federal legislation will set an example for provincial governments to follow up with. Barrier Free BC has a petition going on to advocate for a similar piece of legislation in BC.
I am definitely in favor of the accessibility legislation. I got pretty excited when a survey asking me to provide feedback on the legislation appeared on my Facebook page. I think that is really important that Minister
Qualthrough
recognizes a wide range of disabilities in the legislation. There are many different types of disabilities which all need to be recognized. I've almost felt my disability is ignored when people speak of disabilities because it is neurodevelopmental. I suggest that she pays attention to sensory needs of autistic people, like making sure that federal organizations are sensory-friendly or have sensory-friendly options. I also think that the legislation needs to take discrimination very seriously.
I think that it is good that Canada is finally deciding to make accessibility a nationwide thing. America has the ADA, and it is time for us to do something similar. I am in favor of it. I am skeptical because accessibility tends to be seen as not a big concern for the government, so I'm hoping they will take the time to properly implement it.
Here is the last question. Do you feel that Canada can benefit from a legally laid definition of disability?
Yes, I do. This definition needs to be clear and thorough, however, and inclusive of the wide range of disabilities that exist, including mental illnesses and communication disabilities that may often be left out.
Yes, I do feel that Canada can benefit from a legally laid definition of disability. I feel that it can't be too vague or too narrow. If it is too narrow, people who are disabled may not be labeled as such, and if it is too vague, people may not understand it very well.
This is one I'm not too sure about. Yes, I think it would help, but I'm also worried it may leave out a number who may not meet the specific definition of disabled, but are disabled. So with that kind of wraps up our interview with ASAN. We wanted to thank them for contacting us and having not one, not two, but three of our members speak to us, as well as Bill Conway, who came to us over the phone yesterday, to give us a better idea of kind of what to expect in these coming months with the accessibility legislation. Now, we are tight for time. That is all for us today. Thank you for listening to All Access Pass. Tune in next week. We are back here again Thursdays 2 to 3. And with that, we're going to play a song. It is Trophies by Gentle Party, and they are also from Vancouver, so enjoy.
Bye.